Streaming now at abc.net.au/Brisbane.
This is ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland.
Startups, they're all the rage. We even have a regular slot on this show to highlight them. But that's on Wednesday. My next guest, though, thinks they might be given just a little bit too much credence. Sorrel Gronham is from the University of Queensland Business School, and tonight he's Monday's expert. And he knows a thing or two about innovation and entrepreneurship. Sorrel, welcome. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Trevor.
Yeah, so why are there so many startups, and are there too many startups?
Well, I think to answer your first part of your question, why there are so many startups, if you look at it from an evolutionary perspective, you need to plant the seeds of variety to enable you to do proper selection. And so that's a mechanism in our economy that is very important to seed adequate population of ideas
right.
that can then be selected from.
Yeah.
To answer the second one is that I think we creating startups for the sake of startups because it's a lot of times a politically correct way of looking at it. But the focus should rather be on high growth startups that add value through their innovation, especially on the business model innovation side, where they're actually potential disruptors in game changers.
All right.
And they have the potential to unlock massive markets and hence are referred to as these gazelles or high growth firms.
Mm.
So a lot of times people, you know, misunderstand. They call entrepreneurs, left, right and center, but they're not actually entrepreneurs. There's a big difference between a small businessman or woman and an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And the differentiators are basically that entrepreneurs are innovative. And innovation is, if I can use a colleague of mine, Tim Castell's definition, it's very simple. It's the application of a new idea to create value.
Right.
That's the first thing. And the second thing is that they have a high growth propensity. They want to grow and they want to grow fast and they want to create an empire.
But how do you define that? How do you know that it's going to be high growth? You don't until it starts up. You don't really know that.
Absolutely. So a lot of those startups start with the willingness to or the objective to achieve high growth.
Because they all think they're going to.
Yes,
they all think they're going to be multimillionaires.
And it's in the validation that you've basically determined. So I always tell my students, guys, fail often, fail fast, but please fail cheap. And that is why it's so important, you know, to have a vibrant startup scene. But we need to celebrate those failures.
Yes.
Because what we measure is incredibly important. Because what we tend to do in innovation studies is we are fixated on the product of innovation and not looking at the positive externalities that come out of the process of innovation.
So there aren't too many startups then? Because you're just saying that we need to fail often and fail quickly and start again.
Well, the churn is high amongst startups.
Mm.
And when we talk about gazelles or extraordinary high growth firms, or we call them VC backed firms. So these are firms that venture capitalists target. They are less than 1% of the startup population. And this has been verified in a number of data sets. So they select, it's self-selected. The market mechanism select them.
Right.
The issue here is, however, that, and not that I'm saying Advanced Queensland is not looking at that. I think Advanced Queensland is really a good step in the right direction. And they also look not only at the startups, but also in stimulating building of networks, which is incredibly important for these gazelles to grow.
Right.
The liability of newness and liability of smallness for startups places them at a disadvantage in that they do not have resource slack to develop. But then the main advantage that they have is that they are not boxed in to a paradigm that is stifling.
Mm, yes.
And that is also why the startup scene is actually also assisting existing firms. I know of very few banks that do not have a seat in the incubators and accelerators around in Brisbane.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
So they either sponsor and have teams actually embedded in these startup ecosystems for two purposes. Obviously, it acts almost like a little bit of a skunk works. It gets their employees out of that very regulatory directed, compliant-driven culture to actually
highly
go and play. Yeah,
very
go and play, break stuff, you know, fail. where in a regulatory environment, you don't fail.
Wow. So where do I get a job like that? That sounds like fun. Give me some money to play with and let it, you just go and fail.
Well,
all right.
Well, it's not that they automatically get finance. I think the finance, especially the early seed finance, is more directed at validation. So it's hypothesis validation. I don't think that there's enormous amounts of money just being thrown at these startups. Mm. The difficulty, however, comes in is that we do not have a very vibrant venture capital support system in Australia. When you compare them against the OECD mean, we are half of that. Somebody mentioned the Melbourne Cup. The money being bet there is, I don't know how many times more than all the money
more
being
than
spent
I'll ever
in
see
terms
in my
of,
lifetime. Yes, yes.
In terms
many
of,
times
but then in terms of venture capital funding as well, and that venture capital funding is incredibly important to facilitate that growth.
But do we need more startups then to get people excited by the idea of becoming venture capitalists instead of sinking all their money horse number 13 and race 8 in the cup or whatever it is? But
absolutely. So that risk propensity needs to be looked at.
Cultivated.
To make it a cool thing, if I can call it that, to also be investing in venture capitalist portfolios.
Yes.
Interestingly enough, I've met a while ago at the American Chamber of Commerce, I've met an American fella that came over as part of the Hot Desk initiative of Advanced Queensland.
Right.
And he said he's in a candy shop from California. They're not used there. They're used to many venture capitalists chasing feel-good ideas.
Yes.
And he said nobody's chasing these ideas here. Mm-hmm. So he felt really privileged to be able to gain an opportunity to look at potential investments.
But it's a very different culture there, not just in America, but particularly in California. Which has a greater GDP than most countries in the world.
But it's also intergenerational wealth that plays a role there. In terms of Australia doesn't have that intergenerational wealth that so they don't have capital that it goes hand in hand with the risk propensity of that capital. This is more first generational wealth that you're looking at in Australia, and it's been hard earned money, mate. I'm not just going to spend it on this fluke with these funny new app.
I'd rather put on a safer punt on the cup.
Yeah, there we go.
My point is that startups, by their very nature, usually don't require a lot of capital, do they? I mean, some do, obviously. So if we've got a lot that are just going out there and it's just basically a site with a little bit of software development or whatever it is, and they think, I'm onto something here, is it really going to hurt if we've got a whole bunch of people thinking the same way without needing to have a couple of hundred grand or $750,000, whatever it is, sunk into their venture?
Unfortunately, the gazelles are normally science and technology firms. And for those type of firms, you need a lot of capital in validating some of your assumptions.
Right.
And normally those assumptions are showstopper assumptions, as we call them. To have a concept on the table and not having tested it in its scaled version, is too high a risk for large investors to come on board with. So that is not always the case. It's not always just your app. Even in regards with, I think what you're referring to in the sharing economy or your dual-sided platforms, like your Ubers and your Airbnbs and those type of things, even they need a lot of capital to create that traction.
Yes.
Initially to facilitate that growth, because they're market makers. They need to create traction on both sides because they've got two value propositions for two different audiences or target audiences.
But it's a very different model
because they don't own
the capital.
Absolutely.
And it's totally changed the
absolutely,
thinking, hasn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. So in the sharing economy, and that's the disruptive effect of the sharing economy, is that they can leverage the capital held by either side of that platform,
right,
or both sides sometimes. But that is really the success rate of those are incredibly low due to the fact that it is so difficult to create that critical mass or network effects, as well as then sorting out the governance issue. You know, who does what in this deal side of
play? How's this going to run?
How do you balance? how do you balance
this beast?
Absolutely. So, but most of these gazelles actually require inputs, and one area where we do assist them without just pouring capital into them is by linking them up with existing businesses in these clusters. A good example is Boeing, that have just relocated their research facilities to UQ. Now, at UQ, we've got the whole startup ecosystem, from pre-incubator to incubator accelerator. We've got UniQuest that does the technology commercialization side.
Right.
But we and we have extensive research networks internationally with large corporates. But it is great initiative to get those corporate research and development facilities coexisting, as is the case at Cambridge, where ARM and these types of technologies and technology companies have really leveraged and their growth through those network connections with larger firms. And the big thing is that startups are becoming thirsty acquirers of startups. If you look, for example, at Google, Facebook, these post-startup businesses can see the value of extending their innovation portfolio through acquisitions of these startups.
Yeah, right.
And that is very important. So we need to coexist existing businesses that want to grow, not necessarily organically. They do not think, look, we've got all the answers. We can innovate. The not invented here syndrome that doesn't have that issue. We need to coexist them with a strong startup ecosystem that we are slowly developing, focusing on high growth ventures. And I think that is where we lack at this stage, is really supporting high growth ventures early on in their growth phase.
But is that somewhere where a government should be intervening? Like the state government should be trying to attract more much high-end sort of corporate entities to be based in Queensland, for instance, so those startups can feed off that, as you suggest? Or do we just let the market run its course?
Trevor, I am a big proponent of the free market system because of my, you know, inclination as an innovation scholar, the perennial gales of creative destruction. You know, the capitalist system has been created to ensure failure, not success. And that is the beauty of it. So in this regard, I think if we look at government intervention, it needs to be done very carefully. You're not just going to throw money. You can sometimes do more damage to throw money at businesses than do any good.
Right.
Because, you know, there's always, you're looking at complex adaptive systems here. There's other players in the markets that you will act to their detriment by doing so. You're giving somebody an unfair advantage sometimes.
Right.
But what you could do is to facilitate the environment to be conducive, your tax levers that you can pull to incentivize more investments in growing and fast growing companies.
But we see governments doing that.
They do it, but only to a point, you know, because the one thing that I neglected to mention earlier was that these gazelles are disproportionately responsible for net job creation when you compare them to the full population of startups. Not that I'm saying that, I mean, I've done interviews last week. We're doing a project with Queensland government on artisanal producers and independent retailers. And, and there's some amazing stories coming from far northern Queensland on small firms that are not going to necessarily be gazelles, but they are really creating sticky employment opportunities. So there's amazing stories to be told there. However, if you look at the statistics, it's these gazelles, these 3 to 5% of startups that are really responsible for 70% of all the net new jobs that are being created by these startups.
But does that mean that we do not that we discard these other smaller entrepreneurs or startups that are how do we nurture that environment as well?
What I'm suggesting is that we look at what I'm normally telling my MBA students is that you have to think about a portfolio of opportunities and innovations in your business. And similarly here, if you look at it macro level, at a state and an Australian-wide level, you have to look at where am I over and under invested in terms of capacity building. And I think we're doing really well on the startup side, the small business environment that we are trying to create, but we lack that connectedness and in facilitating the formation of ecosystems around technologies and knowledge fields.
Right.
And I think, but this is starting to happen, as I've mentioned, Boeing relocating their R&D facilities to UQ.
Mm.
I think that is a start where we get these multinational corporations co-locating with these ecosystems, and that just needs to be facilitated. One interesting aspect that the Americans from Silicon Valley have mentioned at the talk the other day at the American Chamber of Commerce was that just the culture, the friendliness of Brisbane as a startup community, that's a big attractive feature.
It is, you know. I've heard that before, just
the lifestyle.
That's something we take for granted without actually realizing.
Absolutely, because we still think that we are mine and a quarry, mine, quarry and a farm, which is actually not a bad thing, because there's a lot of innovations there. The only problem with those innovations is that they are more process related than new product related. In that regard, for example, we've done a study a while ago on horticulture innovation, also for Horticulture Innovation Australia, and it's been shown time and time and again, those that innovate, those that add value at gate, their performance levels are much higher than the rest, because your small firms compete normally on price, or they create these geographic niches, and that's a zero-sum game. If you want to be a price,
it's a global economy, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. So to not be a price taker, they innovate at gate on the product or add value to the final product, and hence become price makers. Be innovative in building a business model to capture some of that or more of that value, and then to scale it, that replicability and quality that they build into their final produce. And there's some good success stories there, but I think that we just need more traction there in becoming, you know, true value creators in high target markets. Europe, we're sitting on Asia. We have immense opportunities there. I saw today there's some initiatives from the Queensland government as part of that Advanced Queensland to build those networks. I know our startup community is taking students over and in China. One of my colleagues were there last week, and she couldn't stop talking about, you know, how far ahead they're leapfrogging us in terms of a lot of their technologies. And I think we can learn there.
We're
lagging
behind. Did she mention anything specifically? Or?
Can't remember immediately, but it was something about Wi-Fi connectivity or ISPs or something. But there's a lot happening in that space, especially in the digital space there, that we can learn and capitalize from.
Yeah.
But again, we do not need to negate completely our strengths, which is, our agriculture and mining and educational services that are big forex earners.
Okay.
But we need to not only focus on that.
Okay, let me come back to a point I made earlier. And you were talking about government intervention can be a dangerous thing, can be a good thing.
Yeah.
But what about on the front of science? like the CSIRO, for instance, you know, which has developed a number of technologies, you know, Bluetooth, that kind of thing, you know. So should governments be spending money more at that kind of level, at an institutionalized level, where we're developing our intelligence quota, if you want to look at it that way, to help drive the advances in new ideas, new businesses?
Absolutely. You need that absorptive capacity to enable you to assimilate new technologies that are coming to the fore. Incidentally, the CSIRO for long had a problem in commercializing their technologies, and they've recognized that. They have commissioned a colleague of mine, Tim Castell. He's running an on-prime program, and you should actually get him over to discuss that.
Oh, okay.
Where he has provided a program to all the scientists at CSIRO over the past, I think it's running for its second year now, to teach them lean startup methodology.
So it's not enough for them to be scientists now. They need to be thinking about how they're going to market
their ideas. Absolutely, absolutely. So in terms of creating value, getting a job done for a defined audience, and how do I now build a business model around that?
They're not business model builders. They're scientists. They're not marketers.
But you would be surprised. On the applied side. Not that I'm saying, look, play around. The pure research, you know, ask the big questions. But a lot of times they come up with ideas that they would love to see to fruition, and to teach them those skills of business model building is actually unlocking a lot of capacity. Because in the process of building business models, you're forced through the lean launchpad methodology to actually get off your butt and connect, to connect with other people. And that also builds networks existing businesses, with other research domains. And it's at the intersect of these knowledge fields that the real magic is happening. So I think to equip them with that skills is incredibly beneficial, to get a lot of those IP into the market, and potential spin-outs, not necessarily from CSIRO themselves, but in collaboration with existing businesses or then startups.
Okay. Yes. So if we need more venture capitalists, more people taking risks and investing in these ideas, and you're not a fan of government intervention, how do we make that happen? It's a big shift in the mindset of the way we operate, the way we think about doing business, the way we look to the future. How do we change that then?
That's incredibly difficult to answer. I think it is by, as I've said earlier, by leveraging your existing core competences and strengths. I'm not saying that government shouldn't intervene at all. They need to, as I've said earlier, continue to create an environment that is conducive for entrepreneurs to thrive, and not to punish growth either. So think carefully around your taxation and your expenditure regimes. Think carefully in terms of, in a digital economy, what does it mean to give people broadband? That's a given infrastructure requirement, etc. So there's no silver bullet here. As I've said earlier, you know, it's a complex adaptive system, and small changes can have incredible impact, and vice versa in complex adaptive systems. So I think it's a combination of many things, and I think we're on the right track. I'm not that big a pessimist, but there's still work to be done, absolutely.
Well, there's a lot to look forward to, no doubt. Cyril Grunham is the UQ Business School, from the University of Queensland Business School, and has been Monday's expert. Thank you so much for coming.
Have a good one.
This is ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland.